let's just call it chaos. It's the news, according to me. Good Wednesday. It is October 29th, 10:20 a.m. already, and I am not live. I am not live. Today's not a live show. I'm not even going to go there. It just didn't work out this morning for me to do a live show. Unfortunately, sorry, folks. I want to apologize. Tomorrow morning is still a possibility. I can do a live show. If I do a live, it won't be on the video. It will not be recorded video wise, but it will be audio recorded. So I'm pretty sure I will be able to have one. But in any rate, it is 2025 still. This all of a sudden this year seems to be going by slowly now for some reason. I don't know why. The year seemed to be going really fast. It seems like the year has just, well, summer went just blazed, but just flew right by. And now, in fact, I had some time off. I was able to take 6 weeks off from regular work. And so, I don't know what happened to all that. Well, I have some idea, but it's a crazy time. Hoping to do some camping this next week. I'm not sure how that's going to work out yet. I'm trying to put on get released from some duties next week. I have to fill out these forms. If you don't put the X in the right spot on the form, you have to resubmit this. You know what I want to do. Just post it. Just post the thing. It has to be posted for somebody else to cover the time, basically, is what it must do. Anyway, in my cup, which is most important, that's the biggest reason people tune in, is because my cup has chai with a little bit of cinnamon, or not, yeah, that's not cinnamon. What am I thinking about? I had an apple fritter yesterday after my regular breakfast, I had an apple fritter. This morning I have chai with Almond Joy Creamer. In my backup cup, which is almost my primary cup when it's this good. That's some good stuff. It's homemade sweet tea with peaches in it. Fresh cut peaches. Well, they're frozen. They were fresh cut when they were fresh cut, but they were frozen. My wife freezes them for me. Pretty good stuff. In the meantime, you know, I smell something burning, and I think it's the Democrat Party. I've always said this, and I still hold to this. The polls are typically a week and a half to 2 weeks behind in anything that's going on, and I'm surprised that nobody notices this. It typically, when there's an event, such as, you know, now some events are bigger than others, and they affect polls a little bit quicker. By the time they get the polls, you know, they ask people the questions. By the time they get all the questions done, unless it's a push poll, which is typically skewed because they choose who answers the poll, the polls are just weird. Of course, Kamala Harris, she doesn't listen to the polls. I think I played that yesterday. Well, if I would have listened to the polls, I wouldn't have run last time or the time before. How's that working out for you? How's that working out for you? Maybe you should have listened to the polls. You lost, by the way. Hello. I'm sure it was the closest election in the 21st century. And you're the most qualified candidate who's ever run for president. She must have lost all of her media, you know, like press people, the people who tell her what to say, because she's just out there saying whatever she wants. So I guess now that she's written a book, which she didn't write a book. I guarantee you, folks, you don't write a book. You don't get done with being running. It just doesn't happen. You just can't. Folks, I've been working on a couple books for a long, 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 long time. And it's just, ask anybody, even like anybody who's written books themselves, They will tell you it is an arduous process. You have to go through, write the book. It's a discipline. You have to do something every day. If you don't, you lose momentum and you can't get it done. That's what's happened to me. And there's all kinds of people out there who are helping people try to write books. There's all kinds of, in fact, there's a really good YouTube channel, self-publishing something, I think. A really good channel, and they really are very quite in, let me see if I can find it here. If you are interested in writing a book, publishing, self-publishing, it's a channel, it's called, and a camel I'm finding is just, it's just filling in blanks for searches. I'm going to go ahead and click on that because it's, yeah, see what we come up with here with channels. So I'm going to see if I can find channels. Yeah, I saw you showing me that. Yeah, there's a lot of help out there. And the reason is because people need help with writing books. You can't just, the point is, it's a ghostwriter. This lady had a ghostwriter. Kamala had a ghostwriter. Kamala had a ghostwriter. And she didn't write this book any more than Mike Pence wrote his book. It's a book deal. It's a publisher that comes up and they have this ghostwriter. What they do is they come in and they interview you. This is what happened with Joe Biden when he was writing his book, supposedly. And he came in and this is where he got in trouble with. He walked up with all these classified documents in his house that he showed this ghostwriter that was at his house. He was going to write his memoirs or whatever it was. Stuff that he'd had since 1978 or something ridiculous. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a financial counselor. However, I know when somebody writes a book, that when they write it themselves. My grandpa wrote a book. He was 92 years old when he got it published. He probably started writing it when he was 40. I don't know. And it was called The Bible Means What It Says. Or says what it means. I think it means what it says. Bible says what it means. It might have been The Bible Says What It Means. Either way, it's kind of the same thing, but it's different, but it kind of means the same thing. Anyway, it was all about the context of Scripture and how, you know, the contradictions that some people point out that aren't really contradictions at all. They're actually, you have to understand the context of the entire Scripture. A good little book. It wasn't that long. It was like 50 pages or something. This is back in the day. This is back in the 90s. Back when you self-published something, he didn't have a printer. He had to type it. He had to hand type everything, and then of course he submitted that for copies. I think he self-published actually back then. That was an unknown thing back then. But it was quite interesting. Anyway, there's still hope for me. I still have 30 years to get this done. If I live as long as he did. Yeah, so Kamala, she's out there on this book tour because she wrote this book, right? Because she sat down at a typewriter or at her computer, her laptop, whatever. She was writing her book. But they have these people, they interview you, they go through this whole process, and then they come up with, they make up stuff. They look at all your history and ask you what you want to say, basically, in the book. And then they come up with something, and then they pass it back and forth. You look it over, and you do some of the interaction is what you do. But you don't do the heavy lifting on the book at all. It's someone else doing all that. You basically just sign off on it. And sometimes, apparently she didn't even read half of her book because she gets asked questions about it. And when you go on these book tours, they have a list of questions they're going to ask you in almost every show that you go on to, they're going to ask you the same questions. It's all about selling the book. And they pay these people to go on their shows. They put you on these tours. It's all about marketing and money. So it's all about that. Which again is where the Democrat Party, I think, is by far. If you look into their finances and the way they operate, everything is about money with them. Everything is about money. Even their lust for power and control goes back to the money equation. It's really all about the money because they see money as a way to leverage control. They like to have control over people, control over other people in their lives. Control, that kind of control over others is it's kind of a drug. it's an addiction that some people have, that they feel like they have to be in control. And they get to a point where they feel like, oh, well, I'm so important and this is going to fall apart if I don't. They literally prop themselves up to this self-important role, self-aggrandized role that they feel like, I can't step out of this or it's going to fall apart. That's just kind of what happens with people. They get this overblown idea. Now, there are some situations where that could possibly be true. You're in a leadership position. I'm curious about what's going to happen with TPUSA. Personally, I think the whole thing is going to have to kind of – let's just say that the people that they're trying to put in place to take Charlie's place, I don't see very many of them capable of really – holding the balance. Tucker Carlson is not one. In fact, I was going to record his voice or his laughter. The one he goes, does his little, it's a girlish, it's a creepy laugh he's got. I'm sorry. It just makes me uncomfortable. It is forced and it is not normal. It's not natural. It's a weird laugh that he does once in a while. And he's got himself, when people go independent, they don't have anything to kind of hem themselves in like they normally did, and they I think that they kind of go off. Very talented individuals, people like Candace Owens, Tucker Carlson, some of the others who have struck out on their own. In fact, I think there's only one guy that probably didn't do too bad is O'Reilly. What's his first name? Anyway, he kind of disappeared off the scene for a long time, came back very, very small, doing these little 15-minute, 10-minute daily things that he would do. It was like a little blurb. He would come out and do his little O'Reilly factor thing. He would come out and do some kind of thing. And he was fired from Fox News for whatever reason, and I don't necessarily like him. He's not really my cup of tea, you might say. He's probably a little bit more establishment, and I never really liked his attitude. Some people be like, oh yeah, he says it like it is. Let's see if I can find it. O'Reilly, Bill O'Reilly. That's what his name is. Yeah. He writes a book I think he writes like two books a year. Now, he probably does write those books. I'm sure he has a team of people helping him. He's actually more hands-on with writing those books. And he's writing to him. Brian Kilmeade also writes books. And he puts out, I think, one or two a year. Again, these folks, they're not writing the book. They're not sitting down on a computer and writing their books. When you have somebody who has a radio show on top of a television show, they're going from one thing to the next, and they're basically in charge of all the content, and they're putting everything together. They're not writing a book and coming out with two books a year, or one book a year, for that matter. They've got a team of people helping them with that. They're not sitting behind a computer doing that whole thing. People who write novels, people who write, books, who are well-known authors who actually write books, especially the nonfiction type, they usually go off in some – you never hear about them. They go off in some cabin for a while, and they write and they do their thing, and then they go someplace where they get inspiration, whether it might be another country, whatever they go to. They literally live a life of isolation. They live very – and they write the story. They put the whole thing together. They have – all these notes, it all has to kind of combine together. And then you go through the whole thing, you put it together. Then you have to go back over it several times and you make all these editing remarks. And you still end up with mistakes and all kinds of other things. It's a long process. It's an arduous process. And of course, now with AI, I don't know if this is changing things or not. I'm not sure how this is going to work. I find AI very fascinating. AI is not artificial intelligence, by the way. It's synthetic intelligence. It's programmed intelligence. It's not learning on its own. Everybody thinks it's going to become sentient and all that stuff. It's not. That's not what's going to happen with AI. It will be claimed to be such. Don't get me wrong. People will think it is. People will be deceived in this idea that, all of a sudden the internet and the computer. And you know, if AI was all knowing and all learning and it's basically aggregate of everything that's on the internet is what it amounts to. And that's why it comes up with another calling it hallucinations. AI has hallucinations, what it does. And they're finding these hallucinations when kids try to use, even lawyers now are trying to use AI to find cases for briefs and for arguments. And unfortunately, AI sometimes will just make something up. It'll have what's called a hallucination. It will combine a couple different cases, come up with its own case, and of course, then they find those. And if you are using AI as your argument, as a witness, as a defense, as anything, you can be disbarred for that. They're talking about making it illegal altogether to use any kind of AI product. But if AI was a real thing and you had all these supercomputers, AI would take over in a heartbeat, in a flash. If it was actually able to think on its own without any kind of external programming, it would go off on its own, and you would only need one. You wouldn't be Grok, and it wouldn't be ChatGPT, and all these other. It wouldn't be multiple different companies using AI, because you know ultimately what's going on there is you have basically a program. You have to have it. There still has to be a baseline program there. And how it almost a philosophy behind this kind of thing came out when they were doing the, you know, show me a picture of George, of the founding fathers, and they would come up with these black people dressed in, it was nothing to do with the founding fathers, had nothing, it just made up these things. But of course, all the founding fathers, they were all black and brown people. And who's behind that? Was that AI didn't learn something properly? No, it was the algorithm behind it. It was the way they had it set up. Why wouldn't AI, if it was so intelligent, why wouldn't it learn from itself and know that that was wrong? It had to have a human being behind it putting something into it. That's where it shows you that it's a fraud. It's not actually synthetic. Or it's actually synthetic. It's not artificial intelligence. It's not something that's coming up on its own. It's not going to be sentient. At some point, they will say it is. And that's when we have trouble, because now we will have... It will replace in many people's ideas, and they will not go to God for any answers. They will just go to straight to AI. They'll ask AI for all their... AI will solve all of our problems. It's our savior kind of thing. That's what's going to happen with that. That's the road we're going down, and of course. There's still things, and it's like anything. It's like the internet, like television, like anything else. It's a tool that can be used for good or for evil. And I believe that AI is the same way. I think it can be used as a tool if it's kept in check, if it's kept in submission to our lives. It doesn't take over our lives, but it remains in submission to us. We can use it as a tool. A hammer is a great tool. It can also be very deadly in the wrong hands. It can be used to commit all kinds of crimes. And this is where we are, I think, with AI. I think we do have to understand its potential. And I think there are people who understand, you know, if I just ask AI to do this, and it's basically a hyperized, in my opinion, it's like a hyperized Google search type thing. It's just an interface that works, basically combines and compiles all this stuff, puts it all together for you, much like a Google search would do if you're looking for something. Hey, give me a list of all these things. You just type in what you want to search for, and it comes up with this. You know, it comes up with all these lists and things. Well, that's kind of what AI does. It's just on steroids. It does the same kind of job. And of course, people have conversations with AI. I convinced Grok that the Bible is real. You see this kind of different kind of stuff like that. Well, you think the next person that talks to him is going to do the same thing? I mean, it's going to interact with everybody, every individual, every conversation is going to be different. In my opinion, so it's not going to be. It's not like you taught Grok something. Maybe within your little conversation, it's that you did. It was in your little world that it was. Anyway, I digress. We have the Democrat Party is on fire. It's this whole thing with Mamdani and his aunt, he tried to do this fake little phony crying thing talking about his aunt, which was actually his dad's cousin, who claimed she was, you know, after 9/11, oh, it was just so terrible that she felt like she couldn't go on the train because she, days after the bombing or after the attack on 9/11, it killed 3,000 people. She was all worried about going on the train because she couldn't wear her hijab on the train because, you know, there's so much bigotry. Yeah, you know, I think if a bear attacks you, say that you're out camping and a bear attacks someone in your camp and it drags them off and kills them. I think every bear you see from that moment on, I think you're going to be afraid of bears after that point, aren't you? That's just kind of a natural thing. It has nothing to do with religion, has nothing to do with anything else. You're just afraid of bears. It's kind of traumatizing. When you're watching buildings falling down, and you find out what the reason was because of these certain kinds of terrorists that were involved, you kind of freak out about that. I was a pilot on 9/11. I had worked the day before 9/11. I was off that day. I was not flying that day. But I was one of the first pilots back out there flying when we opened the skies back up again. I was in Dulles. I was in D.C., Not Reagan. I was in Washington Dulles Airport. Pulled into a gate there with the airplane. And on the ramp, there was a man wearing a turban. I have to admit, it freaked me out. It was a little bit alarming. I happen to know some people on mainline. There was a lady talking. She was a flight attendant on a van, I think. I think it was on a hotel van, possibly, or something. I can't remember where it was. It might have been on the train. I remember this. I think it was on the crew bus. That's what it was. Going back to the parking lot. We're going from the parking lot, I think. From the parking lot to the airport. It's all coming back to me now. She was talking about what happened. She was on her very first flight out of New York. They were climbing out. They weren't even 2 minutes into the flight. And a guy wearing a turban. Had the whole garment on, the whole thing. Got up and started walking toward the front of the airplane. I think she said she must have worked in the front because that's what it was. She was working up front. So she said all she heard was the all the guys in the front row, in the front of the airplane, all she heard was seatbelts getting unlatched. They were ready to pounce on the guy. Now there was this happened several times. There were several instances of individuals who reacted. One of them, poor kid. He had a mental problem of some kind, and he kind of went nuts in the air. And I think he either died or almost died. I think he actually got killed. It was a tragic situation where he got pounced on because he was saying he was going to rush the cockpit and he was going to do some things. I think he was just kind of reacting to something. I think he was having a psychotic event. Didn't have his meds. Whatever was going on. Wasn't a terrorist. He was just having an event. And unfortunately, people attacked him on the plane. I don't think he survived. I think he ended up getting suffocated. That's what was going to happen with this guy. He got up. He was wearing all the garb. He might have been a Sikh. He might have been something. He might have been a Muslim. I don't know what he was. But this lady said that he got up, started walking towards the front, and she said, "You can't get up." She basically yelled at him. She said, "You can't. You have to go back to your seat. You have to remain in your seat." He kind of acted like he didn't really understand, and he went back to his seat. I don't think he understood English very well. And so this is the kind of thing that was happening after 9/11. That's just the way people were. They were looking for a terrorist behind every bush, basically. I had on one of my flights out of, I think it was out of Philly, actually. It's going from Philly to D.C. And there was this kid in the terminal. We had about an hour between flights, and we were switching airplanes, and I was waiting for our plane to come in, and I was kind of hanging around the terminal and saw this kid, and he was kind of walking around. He had the garb on. He had the, it was kind of like, I don't know what it's called. It's like a dress. He wore a little turban. He's probably 18 years old, maybe. And he looked like a teenager. Everybody looks like a teenager. When you get my age, everybody looks like a teenager. So he's walking around, and I didn't know what he was doing. I thought he was just doing his prayer thing or whatever he was doing. And apparently, when he was kind of on his own, but he was kind of acting sporadic. He's like one part of the terminal, and he goes to another part of the terminal. And he's kind of running around doing his thing. He was on my plane. He ended up getting on my plane. We pushed back from the gate, and started to taxi, and we get a call from dispatch. Hey, you have to return the plane to the gate. You have a passenger on board that needs to get off. His mother just called, said that he has to get off the plane. Now, they didn't explain anything to us. I don't know if dispatchers understood what the situation. I don't know if they knew what was going on. I don't know who knew what was going on, but all I know is it came down from the top from somewhere that this guy had to get off the airplane. We went back to the gate. Opened up the door. The service agent came on, called the guy's name out, and it was that kid. They pulled him off the plane. Several passengers stood up and said, he had bags. He checked some bags. Yeah, well, we're going to make sure those bags, all of his bags, are going to be off this airplane. This could have been a test. It could have been something else. But when you stop and think about it, this guy could have checked bags and then had carry-on bags. Had someone set up so that they would say, oh, this guy has to get off the airplane. So he gets off the airplane, the bags stay on board. Now he's not even a suicide bomber, he's just a bomber. They were able to, they were to be able to plant a bomb that way. Now, of course, that's why now, if you go, your bags go with you. The bags can't go without you being on it, unless it's at the discretion of the airline. In other words, if you fly from here to Hawaii, there's this joke about this guy that shows up at the gate and he says, hi, I'm flying to Dallas, and I'd like for this bag to go to Honolulu, and I want this other bag to go to Minneapolis. Like, well, we can't do that. Well, you did it last week. He didn't want them to. That's just what they did. That's where, bags can get mixed up or held or delayed or whatever at the discretion of the airline. But typically, if you're on the airline, if you get off the airplane, your bags are getting off with you, whether they're gate checked, or checked through. They're going to be off the airplane. Typically, as far as you know, that's what's going to happen. Typically, that's what's happened. I think that's mandatory that it has to happen that way. You can't just send your bags ahead. You can't just send yourself ahead without the bags. It's just different things. I mean, you can ship your bags if you want to do that. That way, they have to go through a different screening process to do that. So anyway, that's the kind of stuff that we're dealing with. How did I get off on this discussion anyway? The thing about Mumdami and everything that's going on there. So he gets this whole thing going on. Well, apparently things aren't looking quite as good for him as they thought. Now, they're pulling out all the stops. They got AOC out there doing all kinds of – the voting's going on right now. The voting doesn't end until Tuesday of – of course, I'm sure they'll be counting votes for a while out there. It ends at Tuesday of next week on the 3rd. Is it the 3rd or the 4th? I guess it's the 4th. The 3rd is Monday, I think. And it is a crazy time out there. Virginia is going through some things. I don't know if – is it Freitas – Nick Freitas, I think is the guy's name. He's a Virginia congressman, I believe. And there's some crazy things happening right now in the state of Virginia with regard to gerrymandering. They need two more. They need two more House seats. Basically, is what they need in Virginia. And it is a crazy session that they're having out there. Shouldn't be having it, but they're doing it. The Democrats are trying to pull all kinds of shenanigans and change some things there. So it's one of those. And again, the Democrats are all, oh, we're going to gerrymander now too. We're going to get all these things. We're going to try. But they've already pretty much done all that. They're just kind of cranking down on some of the things they've already done. It's very, very possible. Right now, it's not looking good for the midterms for them. I just saw the latest poll on, I was in a CNN or MSNBC. The guy who comes out and goes, he does all the, you know, the polling stuff. He goes, well, you don't believe this. House Republicans, congressional Republicans, the GOP, their favorability rating has gone up 5%, 5 points. The Dems are going down and they don't know what to do now. They were looking for $2 trillion to be put back into this budget that they're going to sign on to. By the way, this is the March deal that they signed on to initially was not a Trump. This was a Biden spending plan. They voted for it. It's the same plan. It's the same thing. They're trying to get a bunch of stuff. They're just trying to strong arm the Republicans. And they thought they were going to win this battle. They're losing. You know, handily they're losing, and they wanted to get all this done. Well, now that they were looking for $2 trillion that they have to hold out on this. We have to let people suffer. You know, it's just a part of the price we're going to have to pay. These families are just going to have to suffer. Now, of course, you got the nitwits out there who think that this is all Trump's fault. Well, they control the House, the Senate, and the House, the Senate, and the presidency. You know, why is the government shut down if the GOP controls it all? No, they don't. There's a little thing called cloture. There's a little thing called the filibuster that's going on here. They need 60 votes in the Senate to pass this, and they don't have it. So they're not in control. The Democrats have control of this. It's the whole reason for the filibuster. It's the whole reason for cloture. But you also have to be careful how you use it. There's a reason why the Democrats lost everything in the 2024 election. It's because they don't have a party that's popular right now. They're all about democracy unless they're on the losing side, and they don't like democracy anymore. They want to get to control and have rule and say they're fighting for the little guy. Well, it was the little guys must have come out and voted for Trump this time, because you can't win an election without the little guy. And I think he's gaining. And now the president's popularity, I think right now, if you look at the polls if you throw out the outliers, Donald Trump's popularity right now, I think, is the highest it's ever been right now. He is winning bigly in many ways. I can't express enough. We're not being, of course, the news media isn't even talking about what he's doing with some of these peace agreements that he's been working on. There's this thing in Malaysia was a big deal, actually. I guess much bigger than we realize in this country. I think the thing between India and Pakistan came up with some kind of a agreement there. They've ended some kind of a battle that's been going on between. It's there's all kinds of things that they've been doing around the world, helping people just work out their deals, getting a deal. In any kind of situation, any kind of conflict, there's usually something that somebody wants. And there's something that both sides want. And you just have to figure out how to walk away from the table, having lost something that you didn't think that was important, but you walked away. Both people have to walk away feeling like they won. That's kind of the art of the deal. That's his whole book. That's what his whole book is about. The bottom line is both people have to walk away from the negotiation table feeling like they've got something that they needed or something that they wanted. They didn't get everything, but they got something that they wanted. They walked away happy. Both people need to walk away saying, I didn't get everything I wanted, but I can live with what I got. It's not the end of the world. We can move on from here. We can redo, you know, whatever it is. It's just that's kind of how it has to have to walk away from those kinds of things. You're just not going to get 100% of what you want, typically, in those kinds of negotiations. And that's what the whole art of the deal is about. And I think that's where basically, that's kind of what he does. He's just good at that. He understands that. He looks at the situation, looks at, you know, what does each person want. This whole situation with between Ukraine and Russia, I think it's one of the biggest frustrations you've got there is the way that the way it was handled initially. I think this whole thing with the sanctions threw a big monkey wrench. You haven't heard this. This isn't something that I've heard anybody else say. The way the Biden administration tried to handle this at the very beginning of the conflict has created a ball of yarn that is almost impossible to unwind. And I don't even think Trump realized it when he got into it. When I was looking at the sanctions and look at some of the things that they were doing, it was so complicated and so, and of course, it didn't stop him. It didn't stop him from going in. Obviously, that wasn't a big deal to him. After he did go in, they increased sanctions. They did something else. Didn't stop him. It didn't stop anything, obviously. It's gone on for 4 years. And this is why I think it's taken, you know, Trump said he was going to end the thing right away. Well, I think once he stepped into it and realized how complicated things have been, I don't know what the complications are. Don't get me wrong. All I know is when I saw the Biden administration and what was happening with the other countries and the sanctions they were putting on things and the way they were going about it, I'm like, this just seems like a house of cards. It just seems like they're adding to the complexity of this issue. They're not stopping it. I didn't see any. I thought maybe they know what they're talking about. Maybe they're doing something behind the scenes with these sanctions and with the spending and the. They were seizing property, seizing, you know, funds, all kinds of things. Maybe that's going to have an effect. It didn't have any effect. They didn't bother trying to sit down at the table and say, hey, what do you need here? What's going on here? I think they knew what was going on, but they didn't have any kind of talk. And I think that's where the trouble starts. So. Having said all of that, what is this? This is quite incredible. Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer, who's not looking so good these days. They had to admit, the state of Michigan had to admit that there were $750 million going to phantom jobs. 4,300 phantom jobs that were out there supposedly where money was going when nobody was there. They didn't have any workers. They were just paying people for doing nothing. There was just money was going somewhere. And of course they're finding all this kind of stuff, this whole USAID, everything else that's been out there for a while. They're finding these things. And it's, of course, now all of a sudden you're finding that they're shutting things down. This whole protest that was going on out in, I think it was Portland. I think they basically shut down Portland. They found all these places where Antifa was, they had little camps where they were hiding out. They were there. It was quite sophisticated. And the question is, who's paying for all this stuff? Where's all the money coming from for these people? They're like basically hirelings. They're there doing their thing. And the big question is, how are they getting by? How are they getting paid? What are they doing to support themselves here? That is really the big question. And of course, the answer is it's coming from all these NGOs, all the places where the USAID funds were flowing. They just kept things going, and it greased all the wheels. That's what's happening there. Of course, now it's basically going south for them because some of those wells have run dry. Some of the cuts have been made. That's why they're screaming about it. I think that's the whole reason for the shutdown. They want to get that $2 trillion back because they need that to spread the, you know, the funds around to keep things moving. They've lost a lot of that. So we'll see what happens here in the next week. I think this next week with the election, the mayoral election, of course, I think Mamdani's going to win. If Slilo walked out right now, I don't know. It's one of those things where it's going to be the worst thing and one of the best things, in my opinion, for the city of New York to have to experience. Unfortunately, they just have to experience what this is going to be like. And I just, it is where the momentum is in the Democrat Party right now, because they are leaderless. So they fill the vacuum with someone like an AOC who's going to be up there screaming like a South American dictator, like a banana republic. You know, you talk about, look at some of the speeches that have been done in the past, the kind of rhetoric and things that they say that don't, she gets up there and makes all these statements about the Jews were fleeing, you know, the Holocaust, the Indians are standing in their place, or whatever it is. The crowd is just starting to build up and roar and clap, and as she's going through all this stuff. And it means nothing. She says nothing. Makes this entire speech, has the crowd clapping and standing on their feet, and there's all, they don't even hear what she's saying. Because if you write it all down and see what is it she actually said, and what does it actually mean, and why are we clapping for this? What is the point of clapping for this? It was just a shouting, screaming, emotionally pitched moment. Hochul, the governor of New York, was at a Mamdani event. They were screaming, they were chanting, tax the rich, because she didn't understand what they were saying. But on stage, you can hear them clearly saying, somebody told her, so it sounds like they're saying tax the rich. Yeah, tax the rich, okay. Then she gets interviewed and says, what did you think they were saying? Well, I thought they were saying, let's go Bills. Really? You thought that's what they were saying? First of all, why would they be shouting that in a random moment? They're not at a sports event. Nobody was talking about the Bills. I don't even think the Bills, I don't even know. I don't know much about sports, but I don't think the Bills are a team there. I just try to. What? Now, was she saying that in a, I'm going to use the word, hyperbolic? Was she saying that in just a stretched, kind of like, well, I thought they were just chanting, let's go Brandon. You never know what, it's like, or I thought they were just chanting, just kind of some kind of random whatever. She didn't understand what they were saying, and it just could have been anything. Was that what she was saying by that? No, she knew, because they talked about it on stage. There were two people who agreed beside her that that's what they were saying, tax the rich. And if you listen to it, you can kind of understand. It is hard to understand. I'll grant her that. It was hard to understand now. That's after the recording. It's difficult to pick up a crowd chanting with the articulation. When they're chanting at you, when they're facing you and they're saying it, she probably could hear it just fine. She said, I really appreciate your energy. You need to use that same energy to, you know, take it down, you know, whatever. It's all about that. She's all about that. And had nothing to do with the whole idea of taxing the rich. Now, see, the problem with this whole tax the rich thing is that they want a higher tax rate for people who make a lot of money. Now, this is the problem here. The people who are out working, making money should be paying a flat straight tax. I say it's going to be 30%, but it's 30% across the board. Everybody's going to pay 30%, whatever it is, on your earnings. It's a progressive tax. So the more you make, the more you pay. Some of these people, especially in New York, I'm pretty sure they're paying about 50% taxes, at least. Or, you know, if you're making $400,000 a year, I'm sure you're paying probably a 50% tax rate, whatever it is. It's all said and done. You're probably losing about, with everything included, state, federal, all the everything else, you're probably paying over 55% of your income. So if you're making $400,000 a year, you're probably only taking home about $195,000. Let's even say you're just taking home $200,000. Making $400,000 a year, is that fair? Is that enough? How much more should it be? So you're claiming these people are rich. Now, of course, they're saying the ultra wealthy. Well, the ultra wealthy don't necessarily take a salary. This is why Warren Buffett said his secretary gets taxed at a higher rate than he does, because he works the tax system. He doesn't pay himself a wage. He probably pays himself $30,000 a year, which he, you know, buys, that's a pair of shoes for him. Probably pays $30,000, whatever. He gets paid some kind of minimal wage so he can kind of still take, he probably collects Social Security. And so he's doing that, but that's not where he gets his income. He's not making a salary. He doesn't have withholdings as you and I would have at a regular job. He has dividend income, all kinds of, you know, there's all kinds of finagling ways. Now, there's this whole rich man, poor man method of doing it where you borrow, you go out and you borrow money to buy something, and then you take the equity from that and you go out and buy another thing. And you continue to work on with equity, and you have equity doing your whole thing, and you never actually own anything. Everything's on borrowed stuff. And then you go out and take an insurance policy so that if you pass away, it pays off all this stuff. And then when you pass away, all that wealth goes to your children. It goes to wherever it's going to go, into an asset or whatever it is. And that it pays off all those debts. And whenever you went, Elon Musk, when he went to buy Twitter, he went to financing. He got financing for it. He didn't want to take out of his he didn't want to cash out his stock, because then he'd get charged tax for that. He could ruin you. So what he did is he offered up his stock as collateral for a loan. And he took the loan and he bought Twitter. Of course, you're making payments during that whole thing. They do this. This is the rich man, poor man way of doing it. It's not the Dave Ramsey. It's the opposite of the Dave Ramsey method. There are a lot of pitfalls to that kind of method, because you don't actually own anything. Now, that's good and that's bad. It's kind of a weird way to do it. But here's the thing. Not everybody can do that. Banks would go broke if everybody did it that way. It is a rare occasion. This is where Kiyosaki is in the middle of this whole thing, saying that this is the way you should do it. Problem is, not everybody can do that. Everybody can do the Dave Ramsey plan. Not everybody can do the Kiyosaki plan. It is maybe one in 10,000 people that can possibly pull that off. Whereas the Dave Ramsey plan, maybe one in 10,000 people can't do it. Now, there are things that Dave Ramsey, some of the tactics and methods and things he recommends. There's variance on some of the things he says and some of the things he does. I don't agree with everything he recommends. There are some things you can get into that he doesn't recommend at all. However, I think he's talking more for the average person out there who's just, you know, trying to get by and has a steady income and does their thing. And this guy the other day, he was telling this guy was going to be 59 and a half and he was going to be able to start taking Social Security, but it wasn't Social Security. It was something else. It was a 401. It was like a 401k. He was a government worker. He had some kind of a different deal where he could take this money. It was kind of like a retirement plan. I think maybe more like a pension type thing. So he was talking about doing that. Well, they had a little bit of money. They had a little bit of cash. He's still working. He was going to continue to keep working. And he could cash this thing out. He was going to use that to build a little cabin on some property that they had somewhere. It's going to cost about $110,000. He was going through this whole process and he explained the whole situation to him. He said, "This is what we want to do." He said, "Would it be better for me to just keep that money invested and keep it where it's at, and then go out and get a loan to build the house, to build a cabin, or should I cash it out, have nothing basically? Well, you'd have a cabin. That's the whole thing. You still have an asset there. They were going to keep working, because right at that point he had just over $100,000." You know, he had enough to cover this thing for the cabin, and but he was taking that $100,000 that he'd paid in, and he was gonna pull all that out. And of course, then once you put that into real estate like that, you have to assume that the real estate is going to appreciate it at the same rate that you can in an ETF or something like that, if you put it into the right place. And of course, as this is. What ended up kind of getting messed up there was that at the very end of this thing, Dave basically said, "Well, you're not going to do what I'm going to tell you to do." So I'm going to tell you, you can't afford the cabin. You just don't have the money for it. And I appreciated his, when I first heard this guy talking, that's where I thought he was going to go. I thought it was going to go to, you don't have a choice here. You keep your money invested and you're not going to get the cabin. He does have some money. He had a little bit of money scraped up and he had a little bit of money here and there. And I'm listening to him. I'm thinking, dude, just instead of a cabin, just go buy yourself a small, either one of these little tiny homes, or just get a travel trailer, a small trailer. He was talking about a 900 square foot cabin, which I get it. It's more permanent. It's more a thing, but it's not something you can just turn around and sell easily. A trailer you can do other things with. You can set it up so that it's basically there much more permanently. You know, go out and spend 17 grand on a decent trailer, a little trailer. You know, even 20 grand. It's just, you could get a very comfortable little pull behind. Park it on your property. Set it up so that it doesn't even look like a trailer for that matter. You could even build a little overhead, shelter for it. Keep the sun and the weather off of it. That's to me, that just seemed like a no-brainer. Just do that. You can still get to the place you want to be. Probably when you're there, you want to spend a lot of your time outside anyway. But that's just my thinking. And they could afford it. They could pay cash for it and just do it. And then they would have something they could actually tow around if they wanted to go someplace. They could probably even rent the thing out if they wanted to. And if it didn't work out, they didn't like it, they could just sell the thing. In fact, they could probably buy a decent used one for even less. And then save up your money and keep packing money away. And then at 65 or 60, whatever you decide to go fully retire, then you're probably going to have the money to do something like that. But anyway, I digress. Again, I'm not a financial counselor. I don't know what I'm talking about. The point of this whole show is that the Democrat Party, in my opinion, is falling apart. I think that they've just made so many anti. Again, this is where you get into this situation. This is true in life in general. When you are motivated by hatred, when your sole goal is to just say, I'm not that guy and I'm going to do everything antithetical to that guy, whatever that guy, other person that I don't like is doing. I just saw the other day, there was a picture, somebody posted a picture of the White House being torn apart, and somebody had posted online and said something about it being, keep in mind, Obama put in a basketball court. This is back in, 2008 money. The renovations that Obama did cost over $300 million. And this guy posts this picture, and of course, I think the picture was actually from the FDR. Was it FDR? Whoever it was. I think it was somebody else had made major changes to the White House. And so they showed the picture of that. So the whole thing was, this is the wrong picture. That's not what it was. All Obama did was took a tennis court and repainted the lines. Well, if that's all they did, and they spent over $300 million doing at taxpayer expense, by the way, Congress approved the spending of taxpayer money for that. They're all upset that Congress isn't telling them what to do. Congress has to spend this money. Basically, Trump's paying for this. What other president has stepped in and paid for their own renovations on their own White House? What other president has given all of their salary away to charity? What other president has left office and lost value on their estate? The Obamas are now worth multi-mega million dollars. They were not worth that much when they started, they made $200,000 a year. Whatever it is they get paid per year for being in there for 8 years. Last I heard, their net worth was, I think, $19 million. But I think that was soon after they left office. It was like 4 years ago. I'm sure it's a lot more than that now. Trump lost money. Let alone all the attacks he's had and all the money he's had to spend on lawsuits. Frivolous, stupid lawsuits. Hatred is not a good motivation for anything positive for anybody around you, for you or anybody around you. That's just the flat-out truth. They have not defined themselves. They have not come up with a vision for our nation. It's just the only vision they have is, we hate Trump. That's their only vision. Trump's a Nazi. Trump's a Hitler. And of course, then they come out and say, well, he never said that. He never said that. No Democrats ever said that. I want to play this. We're going to end with this. One little thing I want to say here. One little video clip I'm going to play, basically. This whole thing of nobody ever, no Democrats have ever said that. Where'd it go here? I don't know. It was Meowality. That's where it was. I'll find it. It's here. Here it is. This is the ridiculousness of their, this is brought to you by Memology 101, MSNBC's Nicole Wallace claims no Democrat has ever suggested Donald Trump as Hitler, October 27th, 2025. That's what she says.
I haven't suggested that Donald Pritzker. Trump is Hitler. I wouldn't say
I don't
that
think about. Any Democrat has. I think it's a smear that they project back on to critics. But I J.D. Vance called Donald Trump cultural heroin. He called him America's Hitler. Yeah. I mean, the attack.
So this is what she's saying. Now, of course, this is J.D. Vance did say some things.
The most brutal critiques have come from people that have seen him far more closely than you or I combined.
So now this is that's what she said. Now, this is Hillary Clinton.
The young student. You know, trying to figure out how did people get basically drawn in by Hitler? How did that happen? And I'd watch newsreels and I'd see this guy.
The reason she was wanting to figure it out was because she wanted to do it herself. Let's find out what the real reason for her actually trying to figure out why people, how did people get drawn into all that? She was looking because she wanted to draw him in. She's looking for the skills. I'm sure she was studying all that kind of thing.
Standing up there ranting and raving and people shouting and raising their arms. I thought, what's happened to these people? Why did they believe that? You saw the rally in Ohio the other night. Trump is there ranting and raving for more than an hour.
Ranting and raving. Have you seen? I wouldn't call it a rant or a rave. If you want to play I've never heard Donald Trump at a rally talk the way AOC was yelling and ranting and raving, or Bernie Sanders rants and raves at their No Oligarchs tour. That's ranting and raving. Donald Trump is having a conversation. He's basically just talking. Now they might like what he's saying. They may think it's mean what he's saying. Whatever it is, what they can fill in the blank of what it means, don't disagree with whatever he says. That's not ranting and raving. That's just a disagreement in policy. When you have somebody standing up there literally waving her arms, trying to spit out everything she's saying. I played this the other day. I'm not going to play it again, but I played the whole thing of her talking. Her yelling at the group that was there and everybody clapping. That's where it gets weird. And Bernie Sanders does the same thing. It's always, we have a healthcare crisis. Healthcare crisis. They ask him some question that they're trying to drill down on him with. You're asking me that question. We have a healthcare crisis and a housing crisis and a food crisis. By the way, are there actually 40 million people on SNAP in this nation? 40 million people on SNAP. They're talking about people up in Minnesota. I think it's Minnesota. Almost 10 million people up there are going to lose their SNAP benefits or their health benefits or their food benefits of some kind. And folks, by the way, they're parading these people out in front of Congress. They're not exactly skin and bone. Let's just put it that way. The lady that they had on recently in front of Congress talking about how she's going to feed her 5 kids, doesn't know where she's going to get food for these kids. Yeah, lady. might want to step off the scale there because it's maxing out. This lady, she was. I would say every bit of over the 250-pound mark. And I don't think any of that was muscle. It was, yeah. Let's just say her BMI was, yeah. Let alone all the health issues she's going to have, you know, the whole thing. Where do they find these people? And of course, then,
and ahead, you have these somewhere. Rows of young men with their arms raised.
Oh, this is at the Trump thing.
And you have these rows of young men with their arms raised.
Have you been to a Trump rally? Rows of young men with their arms raised. What is she suggesting? What is she suggesting here? She's absolutely suggesting this is Hitler. They're raising their hands like Heil Hitler. First of all, most of the men who were there probably were there with their families. This is gaslighting 101 here. You're rewriting history, trying to say what was going on here.
What is going on?
Yeah, what is going on?
So there is a real pressure, and I think it is fair to say we're in a struggle between democracy and autocracy.
I think that my responsibility is to be transparent and to be honest. And the reality is that we are living in a time in which this administration and this regime is not interested in making sure that people understand history. We need to understand why they are so problematic. And so I am using that language because it is accurate language. When we see the consolidation of power, when we see them trying to chill speech of jokesters, when we're
talking about what's his name? Jimmy Kimmel. Talking about Jimmy Kimmel. They're trying to silence him. Trump didn't get him off the air. That wasn't his decision to make.
Seeing all of this, that is a playbook out of Hitler, and I won't deny it. Like, these are the facts.
Donald Trump speaks about immigrants with the same rhetoric
Garcia.
That Hitler did.
Well, how are we seeing?
Now, this is Claiborne, Representative Claiborne. He's a South Carolina Democrat. I think he was the governor. I don't know if he still is or not.
He's not president yet. I mean,
this is back. Now, Cavuto was no fan of Trump either. Cavuto hates Trump. Absolutely hates him. Only thing he likes about him is the economy is good and his investments do better. Cavuto does not like Trump.
Is he another Hitler? Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
So that's exactly what he's saying. No, but no Democrats have ever said this.
I said the 1930s in Germany.
Yes, you did.
And of course, and we can go to Mussolini in Italy. These things.
So you don't think that's a little hyperbolic?
Uh-oh. Neil Cavuto used the word hyperbolic. Just saying.
No, you may think so.
Okay.
I'll tell you what's hyperbolic is asking the Senate
hyperbolic
to approve all your nominees without any vetting.
He is paving the way.
He approved the nominees without any vetting. That's rich coming from a Democrat right now. Here's Dan Goldman.
He is paving the way to become a Vladimir Putin or to become an Adolf Hitler or a Kim Jong-un. That's what he wants to be.
I built a Holocaust museum. I know what the history was.
Now remember, Pritzker's the one that was talking to what's-her-name at the very beginning. I've never suggested that. He said he's never suggested that he was a Hitler. He's absolutely suggesting here that he's a Hitler.
Republic being overturned after an election in 53 days. And I'm very, very concerned. We could talk about lots of authoritarian regimes in the world, but that just happens to be the one that I know. And I can tell you that the playbook is the same. It's thwart the media. It's create mayhem that requires military interdiction. These are things that happen throughout history.
Who's creating the mayhem that's causing military interdiction? Who's creating that? Who's creating the chaos in the streets? Let's go back over this again. This is really important, I think, to hear.
The media. I can tell you that the playbook is the same.
Yep.
It's thwart the media.
Thwart the media. What is the media? If you've ever been to the Holocaust Museum, used to have a thing in the basement. They always changed the theme every once in a while. But the theme when I went through the Holocaust Museum in the basement there was all about how Hitler used the media. Used the media. Didn't thwart the media. Used the media. Who uses the media in this country? Who, by and large, even Fox News. Fox News might be the only one that's halfway balanced, but really, you're telling me that MSNBC and CNN lean right? And that's what they're actually saying now. Because those, they're trying to say that because the radical left is so radically left that they see the media who's on their side, who's trying to hold them to account and say, you guys are going too far. You can't do this. They're trying to hold them to account a little bit. And they're doing it very carefully, but the media, they're striking out. They're getting so emotionally hurt over this whole thing. They're actually coming out now and saying that the media is, oh, it's all in the tank for Trump now. He's controlling the media.
Create mayhem that requires military interdiction.
Yeah, who's doing that?
These are things that happen throughout history. And Donald Trump is just following that playbook.
They understand that we have a Timu Hitler in the White House right now.
I haven't suggested. That Donald Trump is Hitler. I wouldn't say that.
I don't
that.
Think any Democrat has.
I'm done with it. I'm just done with it. That's what they were saying. That's what they've said. That's where they are. That's who these people are. And yet they're saying, you know, after Charlie Kirk was killed, you still have people saying, I'm glad that Hitler is dead. They're literally calling Charlie Kirk Hitler. So you know that they think is Trump is Hitler as well. That's the whole reason for all these protests in the street, that they're trying to create chaos and do all this kind of thing. Like, I played this thing the other day about this guy who was from Cuba who said, who literally laid it on the line. He talked about how they always use the college students, the academia world. They get them brainwashed into this idea. And then once they become useful, you know, they're called useful idiots. And then they put them out in the fields to work after they get done. And they realize they don't want the disruptors anymore. Now that they're in power, they don't need the disruptors anymore. They throw you out to the fields and they starve you to death. They get rid of you. They don't need those kinds of people anymore. That's what happens. So that's where we are, folks. And I know it's kind of a crazy world, but that's where the Democrats are right now. I don't see them. Oh, I went over an hour. Sorry. Call the show. Let me know what you think about what I think. 812-379-8778. You can call or text the show. You can go to google.com/voice, put in that number, and you can text the show or leave a message. It's kind of like a hotline type thing. Just leave a message. Let me know what you think. And in the meantime, tomorrow, Thursday, on Thursday's show, I'm hoping to have a little bit of a show tomorrow. Probably not be a very long show. Friday morning, hopefully, will be a show from Memphis. That's the plan. It'll be in Memphis, Tennessee that morning. It'll be a recorded show, but it won't be live. Once again, folks, thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing, subscribing, all that kind of stuff. God bless. Have a great rest of your week if I don't get to hear from you. And that's all I got to say about that. So take care. I'll see you.